This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Ellen Burstyn, is having one of her best years professionally at an age when many actresses have difficulty even finding work. She's in her late 60s. Burstyn has been nominated for an Oscar in the Best Actress category for her role in the independent film Requiem for a Dream. In the past year, she also co-starred with Mark Wahlberg and Joaquin Phoenix in the movie The Yards, and her 1973 film The Exorcist was re-released. She's now co-starring in the CBS series That's Life. Let's start with a clip from Requiem for a Dream. She plays an aging mother who hasn't figured out that her son is a drug addict. She stays home all day watching TV and eating chocolates, habits that are responsible for a big weight gain. But after she gets a call saying that she's been chosen to be a contestant on her favorite game show, she goes on a diet with the help of amphetamines, which she becomes addicted to without realizing she has a problem. But her son, who has plenty of drug experience, knows she has a problem. In this scene, he tells her she's strung out and needs to quit.
Oh, come on. I almost fit in my red dress. The one I wore to your high school graduation. The one your father liked so much. Oh, I remember how he looked at me in that red dress.
Mama, what's the big deal about the red dress?
I'm gonna wear it. You don't know. I'm going to be on television. I got a call and an application. And
come on, Ma. Who's pulling your leg?
No. I'm telling you, I'm going to be a contestant on television. I don't know when yet. They haven't told me when yet. But you'll see how proud you are when you see your mother in a red dress, television, and golden shoes.
What is the big deal about being on television? Those pills you're taking will kill you before you ever get on, for Christ's sake.
Big deal? You drove up in a cab. Did you see who had the best seat? I'm somebody now, Harry. Everybody likes me. Soon, millions of people will see me and they'll all like me. I'll tell them about you, your father, how good he was to us. Remember? It's a reason to get up in the morning.
Ellen Burstyn, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
What are some of the emotional and physical changes that were most difficult for you during the making of Requiem for a Dream?
Well, the physical changes, Sarah loses 50 pounds during the course of the film, and we accomplished that with a 40-pound fat suit and then a 20-pound fat suit with accompanying necks, which were glued on and horrible to get off. It took about an hour to peel off, and my skin absorbed all of the glue, and then we had to use hot towels to bring the glue up to the surface, and my skin turned bright red and actually bled sometimes. It was just a nightmare. And then once we got out of the fat suits, fortunately, there was a two-week break in the schedule, so I was able to take off 10 of my own pounds. So, you know, just accomplishing that was always difficult and uncomfortable. The fat suits were hot, and it was hot weather, and so it was just, I was in a state of high discomfort for most of the shooting.
Ellen Burstyn, this has really been your year. You have an Academy Award nomination for Requiem for a Dream. You're in a TV series on CBS. You're within the past year, your movie The Yards came out. The Exorcist that you starred in was re-released. Did you ever expect this kind of activity, particularly in your late 60s?
No, I never expected it at all. I'm having the busiest year of my life. Right after the awards, I'm going to Montreal to make a film for Lifetime that I sold to them and had written for me, called Their Last Chance, which will be set in a prison. And then I go to North Carolina in May and June to do The Divine Secrets of the Yah Yah Sisterhood, which is a fabulous book by Rebecca Wells, and the screenplay is just even more wonderful. I don't know quite what change in the heavens occurred, but I'm receiving all these wonderful blessings and enjoying it and feel grateful.
Let me take you back to one of your first big films, and this was from, I think, 1973, and this is The Exorcist, which was re-released with a new print last year. I should mention, you play the mother. You play, you know, an actress who learns that her daughter seems to be going crazy and then ends up, it turns out, being possessed by the devil.
Mm-hmm. By a demon.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Let me play a short clip from the film. In this scene, you've walked into your daughter's bedroom. She's stabbing her genitals with a crucifix while saying obscenities about Jesus. You struggle to get the crucifix away from her. She slaps you and knocks you across the room. As you lie on the floor, a dresser at the end of the other end of the room starts rolling toward you while your daughter turns her head around 360 degrees. Let's hear the scene.
She did? Your f***ing daughter?
Ellen Burstyn, did you practice screaming a lot for this and trying to figure out, like, which kind of scream should I use?
Well, I was so in those scenes that whatever came out, came out. You kind of can't chart your screams ahead of time. Those were frightening and horrendous scenes to play, and it wasn't really difficult to scream. That must sound weird on radio without any images.
So you said that these scenes were very emotionally intense, so screaming came easy. Tell me about shooting the scene that we just heard.
Well, that was a difficult scene for me. I was wearing a rig around my midriff, and I had a wire attached to it, and the stuntman pulled me to the floor when Linda hit me. And I really should have had padding on the floor, and I didn't, unfortunately, because it did injure my back, which I'm still struggling with. That's become kind of part of my life, that scene you played for me. We got through it. And I screamed, for sure.
Was the final take in the movie the take in which you injured your back?
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't work after that. I was really badly injured. As a matter of fact, the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I was on crutches and just put them down when I went in to do a scene. And then picked them up again as soon as I finished with a take.
What happened? Did you fracture a bone?
I didn't break anything. I just badly bruised my coccyx, and there's a lot of scar tissue formed, which is the result now of that injury. But I didn't break anything, no.
Did you sue or anything like that or consider
it? No. I probably should have. If I had realized how, you know, that it was going to be a problem for the rest of my life, I might have, but I didn't realize that at the time. I thought it was a wound I would get over and heal. But recently when I was working with Charlize Theron on The Yards, and she was doing a scene where she was knocked down the stairs and she was getting pretty banged up, I cautioned her to not be so generous with her wounds, that they can linger and scar tissue can be formed and she can have trouble later in life. A lesson I learned the hard way.
My guest is Ellen Burstyn. She's nominated for an Academy Award for her performance in the independent film Requiem for a Dream. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Ellen Burstyn is my guest. She's nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actress for her role in the movie Requiem for a Dream. Let me ask you about your 1974 film, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. In this, you play a woman who has a troubled relationship with her husband, but then her husband dies in a car crash. And the woman and her son are left penniless. She decides to leave home, take off for the road, and try to make it as a singer, an ambition that she always had. You're the one who discovered the script and got this produced. You got Martin Scorsese to direct it. How did you find the script, and why were you so enthusiastic about it?
I was shooting The Exorcist at the time, and John Calley was running Warner Brothers then, and he sent me a message, because he was looking at the dailies every day, that he would like to do another film with me, and he started sending me all of the scripts that they owned. And this was right at the beginning of the women's movement, and I was very aware of how women were depicted on the screen. And all of these scripts were kind of a man's eye view of a woman, and I wanted to tell a story from a woman's point of view. So my agent found this script written by Bob Getchell, and I really liked it. I thought it was a wonderful script, and I told Warners I wanted to do it, and they agreed. And then they asked me who I wanted to direct it, and I said somebody new and exciting and wonderful. And so I called Francis Coppola, and I asked him who's new, exciting, and wonderful. And he said, well, look at a film called Mean Streets, Marty's first film, which hadn't been released yet. And so I looked at that, and I liked it. And Marty and I met. And then we did the film together. And he was a wonderful director to work with. And I would say he's a wonderful collaborator. And together we did something that hadn't been done for maybe ever, which is really tell the story from the woman's point of view.
It's funny that you would ask Scorsese to direct a movie from a woman's point of view, since he's such a quintessential guy director, particularly Mean Streets. It's about, you know, these two men who have this inseparable relationship.
Yeah, well, when I met with Marty, I said, it's hard to tell from Mean Streets if you know anything about women, do you? And he said, no, but I'd like to learn. And I thought that was as good a response as one could ever hope for. And I think he probably did.
Were there questions he asked you, you know, to get insights into what a woman's point of view might be?
The only one that I remember, we wanted to do a scene where Alice falls in love with the Kris Kristofferson character. And I said, you know, let's show a woman falling in love. So we talked about how that could be visualized. And I said, well, I always get turned on watching men work. So could we have a scene where he's hammering something or, you know, working physically. So Marty designed the scene where he's out repairing a fence and I'm standing and watching him. And you can kind of see when you see the film, you see her fall in love then. And that's what I mean by telling a story from a woman's point of view. It's not something a man would know or think of.
You won an Oscar for your role in Alice, but you didn't make it to the Oscar night ceremonies. You were starring in a play in New York same time next year on Broadway. Do you have any regrets that you chose to do your performance on Broadway instead of accepting your Oscar in person?
Well, it's part of my training, really, to value the work itself more than the rewards that come from the work. And I would have not really have been true to myself if I had walked out on my work to go accept an award. So, you know, I'm sorry I wasn't there to enjoy it, but I probably would do the same thing again if I were working in a play. I wouldn't walk out on it to go get an award.
You were in your early 40s by the time you made The Exorcist, and Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. What impact did it have on you to start becoming better known when you were pretty mature, as opposed to in your 20s when you were playing, you know, like the leading lady?
Well, I had had time to kind of stabilize my emotional life. I don't know if anybody who hasn't gone through fame can really appreciate what a huge blast it is to your life. Everything changes, and you have so much to handle that you never thought you would have to handle. I remember one time talking to Alan Alda about this when we were doing the film same time next year, and he said, you know, there are no class. You can take classes in becoming an actor, but you can't take a class in becoming a movie star. And we then mused on the idea of starting consciousness-raising classes for movie stars, because nothing prepares you for it, you know. The amount of attention and demands and requests and energy that comes into your life that eats up every moment of your life, so that you don't really have time to just sit and be yourself and think about what's happening to you. It's a lot. I know when it happened to me when I was in my 40s, I had had a little better ability to handle it just because I was older and I'd had more experience. But even so, it was a surprising turn of events, and one that took more energy and more stability than I could ever have imagined.
Ellen Burstyn is my guest, and she's nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actress for her role in Requiem for a Dream. I'm so used to seeing you play a mother in movies, often a long-suffering mother, that I was surprised to read that you, very early in your career, were in a chorus line in a Montreal club. Did you have to do high kicks and all that stuff?
I was a pretty good dancer, yeah. I don't remember how many actual high kicks we had. But, you know, we had very beautiful dance numbers. I think three dance numbers I did. But I didn't do that for very long. I started modeling right after that and became pretty successful as a model. So,
what kind of clothes?
I didn't model clothes so much as I posed for illustrators for magazines, you know, that illustrated stories and pocketbook covers. And I was kind of the top illustrators model in New York for a few years.
Now, you left home at the age of 17. Why did you leave home?
I was actually 18. I set out to see the world. I wanted to see as much of the world as I could possibly see. And I grew up in Detroit, and I'd never been outside of Detroit. And I wanted to see what the rest of the world was like. And I thought I should see the rest of my own country first. So I set out for Texas and started my career there modeling.
Did you do anything when you were a teenager after leaving home and setting out to see the world that in retrospect seems to you to be incredibly foolish or naive or dangerous?
Well, when I left Detroit, I left on a Greyhound bus and I headed for Dallas. And when I got there, I just had enough. I mean, I didn't even have enough money to eat. I got there, checked into a hotel, and didn't have enough money to pay the bill, but just felt sure that I would get a job and be able to pay the bill by the end of the week, and ran out of food money before I did get a job. So I went a few days without eating, three. And I don't think I would do that today. I can't imagine. When I think about it now, I think I was either very naive or very foolish or very brave or a little bit of each. But to move to a new city with no money in your pocket and not enough food to eat is, I would say, a pretty dangerous thing for a young girl to do.
And the job that bailed you out was?
I got a job modeling in the wholesale market. Mm-hmm. The wholesale market was coming to town, and the sellers hired local models, and I got a job. But I was just about to be locked out of my hotel room. I just got an advance on my salary in time to pay the bill.
So you're nominated for an Academy Award. I imagine this time around you'll be at the ceremony. You weren't there when you won for Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Mm-hmm. Will you be going with the idea that you've won, or do you think it's better off to think that you haven't won, so you'll be pleased if you do win but not disappointed if you don't?
My task is to just be in the moment, to be glad that I'm there, and to be unattached to the results. I mean, you know, that's what the Buddha tells us, that you do your work with full commitment and passion, and you're unattached to the results. Whatever happens is what is meant to happen, and to be okay with that. So that's what I'll be doing. I'll try and be there and be okay with whatever happens.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Ellen Burstyn is nominated for an Academy Award for her role in Requiem for a Dream. She's one of the stars of the CBS series That's Life. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.